Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we go all the way back to 1993.
And in tribute, this episode is available only on minidisc. Okay, Patrick, I thought today we would do a patron episode. We're doing so well. We're getting so caught up on these patron episodes. It makes me very happy, not just for my own sanity, but also because I love the content that we get from these people.
Oh,
they always
yeah.
have great ideas. And the patron episodes are people who support us on Patreon, and they get to come on every quarter, is the way it works, and they get to pick the topic. And so the show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us is Barrett Reese. Hey, Barrett.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing well.
We're doing really well, man. And I will say this, Jim. Barrett has been one of our longtime supporters of the show.
Yes.
I mean, he's been amazing. I mean, I remember the night I met him at a Best concert.
Yes.
And I first got introduced, and it took me like 5 minutes to go, wait a minute. That's Barrett Reese from Pittsburgh.
From Pittsburgh. He drove
DC
out.
DC right now. It was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that.
Oh, it was fun. And I also have a good box of records coming to you, Barrett. I just went to the Unique Thrift Store today for 20% off Monday. So I got some good stuff coming your way.
Oh, nice. Looking forward to it.
This is great. Speaking of gifts and such, and supporting the show and everything, out of the blue, about, I don't know, a couple of months ago or so, Barrett sent me a dog DNA test kit.
Yes!
Because
he heard...
Oh, no, it was in the newsletter. We had a shadow in the newsletter. And in the newsletter, I just said, you know, he's a shepherd mix. We don't really know. And Barrett was like, you should know. So he he sent this dog DNA kit. I guess he's used these for his own dogs. And I have the results. I got the results. I just got them.
This is the official reveal.
I just got them this morning. I just got the results back.
Wow.
100% shadow.
Hang on one second.
That's right.
I need to get a pencil because people in this house are very interested
oh, they are?
In these results.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Is there wagering involved?
There might be.
Yeah. All right. He's going to get a pencil. Yeah, it does say 100% shadow, 100% awesome. That is on here.
Okay. All right, ready.
Well, so here's the thing. Let me just start with, before I reveal which breeds, let me just start by saying they detected 11 breeds in his DNA, okay? Now, one of them is only 1%, so I'm just going to disregard that. All the others are 5% or higher, so I'm going to say there's 10 breeds here, okay? And then I like the way they do this. They group it by, like, different classifications of breeds, right?
Makes sense.
So the highest grouping, if you group these five breeds together, you get 45% herding dog, okay?
Mm.
And that is divided up among these five breeds. Shetland Sheepdog, White Swiss Shepherd, which I've never heard of.
Mm. Me neither.
A Great Pyrenees.
Yeah.
Australian Cattle Dog.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And Australian Shepherd, all right?
Nice.
So there's various percentages on each of those, but you add those up. You get 45%, okay?
That's a big percent.
So when I would call him a shepherd mix, which is what the shelter, what they said as well, that was like their best guess. I think I was correct on that. Shepherd mix would be accurate. It's just now
totally
we have a little more detail.
Oh, yeah.
The next group at two breeds, 27% is Asian breeds.
Mm.
This I had no idea. I was thrown for a loop on this. Chinese Shar Pei and Chow Chow.
Wow, a Chow. Oh. Maybe. Yeah.
So there you go.
I could see that, you know, those chows are very anxious kind of dogs.
Yeah.
And Shadow sometimes, when his parents aren't there, gets a little anxious.
And then you have 14% combined sporting group. And that's divided up among a Brittany, which I think is a Brittany Spaniel. Brittany. It just says Brittany here.
Brittany Spears.
Yeah. And Chesapeake Bay Retriever. So right here, the Chesapeake Bay. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then 13%, one breed in the guard category, American Staffordshire Terrier.
Mm.
So there you go. I listed 10 there.
Well, I have recently visited Shadow, and he has a beautiful coat. You know, he's got some of that retriever coat in him, too. He's really a gorgeous dog, and he's also my only true friend. And he's really nice. I got to see him.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the coat, because I was texting with Barrett about this earlier today. The way I know that this DNA thing is probably pretty accurate is they also give you results of like traits, not just the breeds. And the traits are right on. I mean, they have his coat colors exact, even to the point of where it says white markings possible. I mean, yeah, you know, he just has a little bit
he's
of white.
Got those, yeah.
You know, it says dark muzzle, which is what he has too. Like, it's like that specific. And they don't have a picture of him or anything. They just have that gross swab that we struggled to get, right?
Are you saying science is accurate? Is that what you're trying to say?
I mean, it says here, it says long coat. It says occasional shedder, which is true.
Yeah.
I mean, like all this stuff. They got this all down, man. Oh, and then look at this. It says ear type. And it says partially floppy. Now, that's exactly it. They don't stick up all the way, but they don't flop down either. Like Snoopy, you know, they're like kind of partially up and then they flop over on the end, right? Like, how does it know? So anyway.
Yeah.
And that's also MJ's bad band name of the week, partially floppy. Sign up for the newsletter. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And Barrett, that was so cool, man. Yeah. You bought that and sent it to us. That was so great. And it was in that big box of packages that I forgot at the post office during the pandemic. But that was so cool, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, I mean, thank you. I mean, but it was one of our dogs came back as a schnoodle when we first rescued her out of Puerto Rico. And we got the results back 100% not a schnoodle.
Really? Is that right?
No. Yeah. It was a bearded collie.
Wow. Wow. And how did you confirm that it wasn't right at first?
We had no idea whatsoever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
that's what they thought when you rescued, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because she was just like stray hanging around a gas station in Puerto Rico with a broken femur, broken pelvis, and heartworm.
I've been there, unfortunately. Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, Barrett, clear this up. How many dogs do you have right now? Two, right?
Yeah, just two right now.
Okay. And you guys, do you frequently rescue dogs?
No, I've never had a dog in my life until like the past 7 years. My wife had one dog back growing up. And the first thing we decided when we got the house together was we need a dog.
Nice. That's cool. I was always a cat person, too. My family always had cats until I got married and we had a little kid. And then I was like, we got to get a puppy, you know, play with kids. And I'll tell you, it makes a nice segue, Barrett, because I was thinking about this when Jim and I were setting up this episode, which is one of our favorites when we talked to you. 93, right? Mm-hmm. 1993 had 1 2-year-old human being in our life, and we're about to have another one imminently. So it was an extremely busy year, but also a year where we thought about like, hey, man, we're going to get a house and we're going to, you know, maybe get a puppy and do that suburban thing. So I can't wait to hear your musical memories of that time.
Yes. I mean, if I dig right into it, I mean, I graduated college December 1992 after 4.5 years and basically had maybe 2 weeks off, got my first real job and was suddenly tossed into this apartment back in the big city of Cleveland, Ohio. And the thing I remember the most was, you know, waking up every morning like, this is my own place. I don't have roommates. I'm here on my own. I can't screw this up at all.
Right.
But I remember waking up and I always had the stereo in my room. And the one feeling of absolute independence was being able to just turn on that stereo, blast music.
Yeah.
And now I've written a journal pretty much like almost every day since 1988.
Wow.
So I've kept notes. And when I was thinking about like, you know, like what other people have covered for years and years and years, I would always like write notes of like what I'm listening to, stuff like that. And I mean, these four albums came to the top of my list. They're not the greatest albums ever, but they just like really define that whole early January to March 1993 for me. I'll just list them off here. It's The number one for me was by The was their album Dust that came out early in January. And then there was also The Cranberries, Everyone Else Is Doing This, So Why Can't We? Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, milestone album in those days. Radiohead's Pablo Honey. And then one of the ones which, I don't know, I think I kind of grew out of it fast, but that thing was always in my radio constantly, was Screeching Weasel's album Wiggle.
Okay.
So I've never heard of Screeching Weasel.
You've never heard of Screeching Weasel?
What?
No, I've never heard of them.
Okay.
I swear, I've never heard of them. I don't know where you want to start, Barrett, but that's the one that intrigues me by far the most.
Okay.
I've never heard
of them. That's a good place to start. I'm only a half step above you in that I have heard of Screeching Weasel, but I'm not sure I've heard their music, or if I have, I'm just not making the connection. So this will be good. All right.
Oh, so as a major reader of Maximum Rock and Roll magazine back in the day,
okay,
being a loyal reader of people like Michael Board, George Tabb, all those columnists, But Screeching Weasel was kind of like right along that whole like little niche of like Ramones type of style, where you also had bands like The Queers and you also had bands like The Riverdales.
Yeah, I love The Queers.
Yeah, I mean, I saw those guys for years, but like Ben Weasel and his, you know, constantly changing band. I mean, that album was just so definitive, like early 1993.
Right.
I mean, I would pick like the one song like Crying in My Beer, like just represents that whole style off of that album.
All right, there you go. You can definitely hear the Ramones influence for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, totally.
So what was it that attracted you to this album?
That was just the standard like pop punk stuff I grew up on back in the 1980s. Just kind of a go-to music, like just you pop that in your car. You know, that was your driving music in the morning.
You totally see that.
I had a friend who loved to listen to Superchunk while he drove his car. Mm-hmm. He was like, I don't like Superchunk when I'm in my house, but I love them when I'm driving in my car. And I can totally relate to that.
Oh, yeah.
There's some records that are absolutely that. Yeah,
totally.
Anything else from this record? Or
I mean, pretty much the whole record is kind of that style with the, you know, short 2 to 3 minute like tracks.
I will say Screeching Weasel, when you first hear the name, I think you think it's going to be more like a metal kind of band.
Yeah.
Or something like that, right? But it wasn't like that at all.
No.
All right. Well, what's the next one then?
Going to the one that really affected me the most is probably the back in the day.
Nice.
And this was like the go-to album for pretty much most of that year.
Dusk.
Yeah. And I mean, of course you have, you know, Love Is Stronger Than Death and you have, you know, Slow Motion Replay. But I still think like this tight top track off that never really got much like radio play was Sodium Light Baby. So like the whole intro, I mean, reminded me a lot of like U2's Octung Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And just like really, really a solid track that never got much attention at all.
All right, cool. Let's give that a listen.
As I sat in the back of that old taxi cab, waiting for the evening to come. On every street of this city, I heard you call my name. You're the strangest feeling I ever had. The strangest feeling.
Yeah, that's cool. I've always liked this band a lot.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, their follow-up albums were never that great. But, I mean, this is one of their most solid ones they've ever really put out. Well, I mean, mainly there was Matt Johnson, who's like the, you know, founding member and the only, like, actually, you know, definitive member of the entire group.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if they're still performing nowadays or not. But, I mean, I guess this album was just loaded with great tracks.
This band, Barrett, and this song especially, and some of the albums I have, I think I have Soul Mining and something else on vinyl somewhere back in the collection, but it begs me to ask you guys both a question. You can answer in turn. How do you feel about Roxy Music, Barrett?
That's like one of those ones where it has to be the absolute right mood, I guess, at this age nowadays.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, those were songs written, like, you know, for people our age back when we were in our 20s.
Right.
You know, they weren't writing songs for guys our age nowadays.
Right. Right. Totally. Yeah.
But, oh, my God, this stuff just holds up so well.
Yeah. And Jim, how do you feel about Roxy Music?
I love Roxy Music, but I think I've gotten into them more as I've gotten older. I think because music
that's how it was with me. Yeah.
Because their music has a certain complexity that their music has a certain complexity that maybe you don't quite you can't quite grasp onto when you're like a Van Halen kid. But you know, you get a little older.
Totally, man.
You know.
Yeah.
So you ask this because of the?
Yeah, and I was going to say, because of that, like when I listen to that, I hear a band that appreciated Roxy music like really early on, right? Because, you know, by 93, if you were doing Roxy music kind of influence stuff, that's really cool, right? Because they hadn't reissued it all on CD yet, and it was still something you could find. And I mean, Soul Mining was pretty early, and I think the are really, really interesting.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Such a cool pick. Yeah.
I like the way they do that sort of rock, you know, mixed with like dance beats kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not bombastic, though. It's kind of subtle and kind of, you know,
and
understated.
It doesn't feel forced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't feel like they were trying to make it commercial. Like it was just natural when they put it all together. So, yeah. He was just the guy that was on top of all the stuff that was happening. Like kind of early on. So that's a brilliant pick. Love that, Barrett.
Oh, sure. That always goes to my top of my list if ever there's like, you know, traveling music.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now the other one, in going back to like an episode I did like a while back, was like, you know, bands I broke up with, was like Radiohead.
Yeah.
And the only album I've really loved of theirs and has always stuck with me is Pablo Honey. Because you have songs like, you know, Stop Whispering and Anyone Can Play Guitar. And I don't know if it was just Tom York. Once I hit the album The Bends, and you had, you know, the fake plastic trees, I just thought, you know, it just wasn't connecting anymore.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting because, you know, most Radiohead fans would go the other way on this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, even totally.
Even the band sort of, don't they sort of dismiss this first album to some extent?
Yeah, I mean, they won't even do like Creep in concert anymore whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah, which, I mean, fine with that, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was like a very solid album. And I remember getting a copy of The Bends, and it was just like, I don't know if it's like, you know, once again, being that young between being 22 and 25 going on 26, like what changed? But it just seemed like it just was not the same, you know, band that I really loved at first.
I'll say this at the risk of, you know, sparking off a conversation, but I'd be happy to do that. I mean, let's be honest. Radiohead are a fairly pretentious band, right?
Right. And that's
part of their charm.
Yeah.
Yet, when you think about that, right, when you approach something as you're going to be artistic and pretentious and serious and, you know, everything's going to matter. Every note's going to matter and all that. And I think, look at a band like the 1975, right, as an offshoot of Radiohead. Yet, when you look at their first statement, second statement, like, that's really interesting, right? Like, oh, this is, you know, before we got any kind of feedback from the public, like when it was in my mind or in my bedroom or, you know, when we were small, this is what we did. That's really interesting. And I think it matters a lot, you know, how they got that first reaction from people. So...
yeah, it's perfect. You mentioned the 1975. That's like probably the first band I would compare to that, too, where, you know.
Same thing.
You know, they came out very, very simple, very, very concise to their message.
Right.
And it's gotten so, I still love the 1975, but it's gotten very, very, you know, complex.
And I can totally respect that first statement from a band when they're coming out like, this is what we're going to do. And yeah, you know what? We do want to be famous. do want to be huge.
Well, yeah.
You know, and so that's kind of cool, too.
Well, and I'll point out that this album in the United States did go platinum.
Right.
So,
there it is. Yeah. They wanted to sell records.
Yeah. Okay. And then what was the fourth one?
The fourth one is the Cranberries.
Yes. Now, this was a huge record.
Yeah.
It was, man.
And it took me a while to go back to this one after a couple of years, and I actually got a cover album done off of that Turntable Kitchen by a band that covered this entire album.
Yeah, we've talked about this a couple times. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those ones that was like overplayed so much back in the day, but like I still remember, you know, 1993 going down to Quonset Hut in North Canton, Ohio, my old hometown.
Yeah.
And grabbing this along with, I think it was Gin Blossoms and also The Sundays that came out right at the same time, and grab this one. But the one track off this, which is Howl, has always been like, you know, tops on my playlist.
All right, we'll do that one for the playout then. That's great.
All right.
I think this record, and we talked about this band a little bit before, Patrick. I think it's just, I really think these songs are just great pop nuggets, and they're just beautifully done. They really are.
Oh, yeah.
Like
totally agree.
Yeah.
I still remember walking over to the stage 1994 at Woodstock and watching them play and was just absolutely just enthralled by it.
Yeah, I don't even know how to say it exactly. They're like one of those bands that just, I think use a word that you use for the. They're just sort of natural. They just seem to be very natural and sort of knew what they were doing. You know what I mean? Just they're playing to their strengths. Exactly. And you know, it was great. Yeah. And this one was, and this was really big. And I think part of the reason why this was such a big album too, not just, you know, sort of the quality of the material, but also they seem to have credibility, but they also seem to have a fairly broad appeal too.
Yeah. You
know? And so I think that's why it was so big.
I think it was one of those times where, you know, all the bands were being signed for grunge, punk, the old type of stuff. But this one actually really had talent. They actually had talent.
Great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point there because they did. And they also stood up a little bit for those people who always wanted to have that pop sensibility and, you know, never asked grunge to be in their life in the first place. So, you know what I mean? It was really, really good. Yeah.
Well, I think it's so funny you bring that up, too, because here we are talking about 1993, which was really, this was probably like the height of the grunge, you know, fanaticism, right? And yet,
my God,
Baird didn't pick any of those records, so I love that.
That's right.
That was my first thought when I saw your list. I'm like, yes. Not that I don't like some of that stuff, but I just thought it was great to have that perspective,
You know, cause I think, like by then, you know, if I was turning on a radio, I could listen to those songs. But to me, it was just, once again, going back to that, you know, first apartment. I wanted to listen to what I wanted to listen to. Had that stack of cassettes and CDs back then. And these were the top ones on that list every single day.
That's cool.
And that's a great way to frame it too, Barrett. Thank you, man. Because that first time you're able to control that music in your own environment means a lot. Yeah, it really does. And I think the Cranberries read that time like really, really well. Not that they were, you know, in any way calculating, but they were just like a band that knew what they believed in that time, and they stuck with it, right? They were not going to be bowed by commercial forces, which is very admirable. So,
I also like, Barrett, what you were saying. You said this would have been your first year of like your post-college, Barrett.
Yeah, this is like straight out of college, jumping right into my first apartment on my own.
Right.
Didn't have roommates, anything like that. You know, I controlled the radio, came home at night, blasted music.
Right. I can remember those days very well. It was just, you know, 3 years earlier for me. But also, it's like the first time, at least for me, it was the first time you're actually starting to make a little bit of money. But, you know, not necessarily a lot of money because it's your first job, but enough that you've got some spending money, right?
Yeah.
So it was like it's a time when I could buy these CDs, but I couldn't go crazy, right? So when I bought these CDs, I still had to sort of pick pretty wisely, and then I just played the hell out of them, right? They do become your roommates. They become your friends, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, they had to be good enough for you to invest a few hours in them each day. So.
And that was those were back in the times, too, where you'd like, you know, the record companies would give you like one good track, and the rest of the record was just complete crap. And it'd go to the stores.
There could be that, for sure.
Yeah, you'd come home, it's like just get really disappointed.
Can I have that record contract?
Yeah. And there were the grunge bands that had like that one good track, and, you know, fine. But, you know, $20 spent on a CD, no.
Well, that was the point I was going to make, too. CDs were not cheap back then, either.
No, they were not.
Man. Well, this is great. Thank you very much, Barrett.
Thank you, Barrett. Oh, amazing, man.
I love this perspective. This is good stuff. All right, if anyone wants to comment on the year 1993 in music, we would love to hear it. Send us a voice memo. You can do that, or an email to rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call and leave a message on our phone line. The number is 612-440-1984. There you go. Or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Suburbs Pod. If you'd like to be a patron and support the show, go to patreon.com/suburbspod. And if you would like to know your dog's breed, you can get one of those dog DNA tests, and then we would love to hear that, too. Send us the results, and we will read them on future shows, all right?
That's a new feature. Yes. Yeah, it'll be great. Yes. Yeah.
What breed is this? All right. That was so great. Thank you so much for that. And I got to be honest, Barrett, I wasn't sure that, you know how there's like a expression, don't ask a question you don't want to know the answer to, right? I wasn't sure really going into this. Is this a good idea or not? Is it better just to remain a mystery? But it's actually been really fun. It's been a lot of fun. So I appreciate that.
It has. And I just will say this to folks as they sign off for this episode. Don't dream about the band Candlebox tonight.
There's an example.
Your intro.
There's an example. All right.
What did I just hear the other day? It was like, remember the song, The Final Countdown? Thank you. It's in your head for the rest of the day now.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's what it is.
That was great. Okay. All right. So we're going to play out with the Cranberries. How?
Thank you, Barrett.
Thank you again. And we'll see you at Suburbs Fest, we think.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, so, yeah, baby.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you drive off for Pittsburgh for a regular show. You got to come for the Suburbs Fest. October 1st and 2nd here in the DC area, two nights, Friday night at Settle Down Easy Brewing in Falls Church, Virginia. And then the second night at the American Legion Hall in Silver Spring, Maryland. And there's going to be music and gatherings and meetups and just good times. Obviously, some drinks flowing.
And Jim, we don't mind making an announcement, breaking news here on the podcast, folks. I can confirm that, number one, Wingtip Slope will be playing on Saturday night. And number two, Brad Mailer will be appearing with Wingtip Slope.
Really?
I've worked that out. That's right. So we're going back to the original Slope Quartet, and he's going to play a couple songs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so the bands confirmed right now for Saturday night are Wingtip Sloat, Dot Dash, and Apollo 66.
Yep.
And we're working on some other special appearances as well. Yeah,
that's
so
right.
This is great. Okay, and then for Friday night, of course, at the Settle Down Easy Brewing, if you bring an instrument, you can play a song there. You don't have to.
That's
you can
right.
If you want. Andy might have his washboard.
It's possible.
Yeah. All right. I like that. All right. Okay, let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Barrett Reese.
And we'll talk to you all later.
Did they mention spinning around in the street when he sees another human, not another dog?